Okay, why don't we go ahead and go here. Okay, great. Well, we've got a wonderful gathering. This is really, really exciting. Have such a nice group of people here. So we'll go ahead and begin with Gassho. Please join me in Gassho. Welcome everyone to our ongoing Shoshinge study session here. This is at the San Mateo Buddhist Temple. This is the third installment. We do this once a month on the second Wednesday of the month. I notice we have several friends from the Seattle Betsuin joining us this evening. And I know that you've been doing with Kusunoki Sensei a kind of ongoing reading of the Three Pure Land Sutras. So this is something kind of along those lines. We chant Shoshinge. We just did that Shoshinge chanting at 6. Then we take a little time. We start a little earlier for that one, so we have some time to discuss. Today we talked a little bit about some of the pronunciation things that come up with Shoshinge. And the way in which there's some special pronunciation that we come across in that. And so kind of getting into some of that technical chanting stuff. And then for this session, the 7 p.m. session, we kind of do a reading and focus more on the content. And we're going at a very deliberate pace through it, usually 2 to 4 lines per month. So we're really kind of soaking it in. And I'm gonna, I did PowerPoint a couple months. Today I prepared a handout. For those of you who joined the Seattle session, I'm drawing on some material that I use when I talk about the 48 vows. So some of that's gonna look familiar for all of you. And so where the material is on the temple website. And I think before we get into that, I wanted to just give everyone a chance to just do a brief self-introductions. If you're able to unmute yourself and just kind of introduce yourself, your name, maybe where you're joining us from, anything else you'd care to add. Just to kind of get to know each other. The way that I do this, I'm recording now. I'll pause the recording during the self-introductions. And when I'm recording, I actually record on a speaker view. So my portion of, I'm gonna say a few words at the beginning to kind of introduce. So that portion will be posted on the San Mateo Buddhist Temple website. And then I'm gonna stop the recording. And then we'll have an open discussion, and none of that will be recorded or posted anywhere. So, and then at that point, it's nice to kind of have everybody contribute. If during the part where I'm presenting, you want to ask a question, that's fine. Just, with the understanding that your face may wind up on the internet at that point. I can try to edit it out, but it's, sometimes it's a little tricky with Zoom recordings. But anyway, let's begin with some brief self-introductions. So we'll go ahead and introduce these materials that we'll be working with. And so for each study session, I post the information and the materials here on the San Mateo Buddhist Temple website. And so after the session, I'll also add the recording of this portion that I just started recording again. So I'll add a recording of this, the kind of the so-called lecture portion of the talk. And then again, we'll stop the recording for free discussion after that. So the session, as I mentioned, we begin with the 6 p.m. Shoshinge chanting. For those of you who weren't able to join that and are interested in the chanting, there is an audio recording of it. If you go to that, click on that Shoshinge Sofu chanting link, and you can listen to that. It's just me. Those of you who are from Seattle, just listen to Kusunoki Sensei. He's much, he's got an excellent chanting voice there. And then we also have a link to the full text of the Shoshinge. This is from the collected works of Shinran. So this is a great resource for those of you, again, who would like to learn more. This is the collected works of Shinran that has been digitized and posted on the internet. So for those of you who have the blue collected works of Shinran book, the content is the same here. And it's nice because it's searchable too. But the Shoshinge is linked to here. So today we'll just be focusing on these two lines that he established, the supreme incomparable vow. He made the great vow rare and all-encompassing. And so we'll just be focusing on these two, but you can sort of get the context of how this fits into the flow by looking at the this link on the website. And you can leave that open in another tab if you want. And then we also have the 48 vows. So this is posted on the San Mateo Buddhist Temple website. I'm gonna start by talking a little bit about these 48 vows. Again, we talked about this in the session. I was able to join with Kusunoki Sensei up in Seattle a couple weeks ago. And so today I'll be focusing really on the 18th vow, but I will be going over some of the things I talked about there. So I thank you for your patience, those who joined that session as well, which is about half of you this evening. The other thing we have is a handout here. And so the handout, and this, if you want to make this bigger, you can pop it out this way. And if you hit this button here, fits it to the width. And so this is the section. This is from the Jodo Shinshu service book. So you can see here, we have the pronunciation. We have the melody in which it would be chanted in both the Sofu and the Gyofu styles. You see the Gyofu is very monotone at this point. And so this, we'll talk a little bit about this. And then going more into the handout, this is, again, something I put together on the 48 vows to help us kind of situate the what we call the primal vow, the 18th vow. And that'll be the focus, because that's the focus of these two lines that we'll be talking about here this evening. So before we get into this, this specific section of Shoshinge, I wanted to talk a little bit about the 48 vows as a whole. So I'm going to switch over to this other page. And let's see if this makes it bigger. Is that better? Maybe that's a little better. Is that small for people? Is it okay to see, or is it pretty small?
Pretty small.
It's kind of small.
Pretty small, isn't it? Yeah. Let's do this. Let's see here. We can make it bigger.
That's better. That's good.
Is that better?
Excellent.
Is that good to see? Okay, good. All right, great. So I wanted to look through these 48 vows a little bit here. So before I do, I want to give some context about what the 48 vows are for those of you who are new to this aspect. And this is a little bit of review of what we've been talking about in the previous sessions. So the Shoshinge itself, as we talked about in September and October, is Shinran Shonin's expression of his appreciation of the Nembutsu teaching. And the Shoshinge, the first section is really about the content of the sutras, and specifically the larger sutra, the teachings of the Buddha. And it begins with this taking refuge in Amida Buddha, with the heart of the Nembutsu. And then the next thing it does is to tell the story of a bodhisattva named Dharmakara. And Dharmakara was a king who heard the teaching of a Buddha. This isn't the historical Shakyamuni Buddha. This is the Buddha Lokeshvara Raja. So he heard this, he heard the teachings of a Buddha, and he decided in that moment to completely change his life. He gave up his kingdom, and he gave up his royal status, his rank as the king, and he began to pursue Buddhist practice as a bhikshu named Dharmakara. And this is really significant, because if you think about it, rejecting his kingdom is rejecting all the material possessions. You know, we go through life, many of us, myself included, much of our life we spend trying to get, stuff, and thinking that if we have, the right stuff, then we'll be happy. If we get the right material goods and things, then we'll be happy. And so to have a king renounce all of that, I mean, that tells us that even if you had everything that you could want in your world, that is not going to bring the ultimate fulfillment, ultimate peace of mind, ultimate happiness. And so the king renouncing his material things is that's in a sense pointing us to the fact that, well, the stuff, material stuff, is not going to bring happiness. Then he also renounces his status as the king. So that is the most respect you could have, the most approval of others you could have, the most high social status you could have. So that's another thing that we go through life chasing after, having people respect us, people approve of us, to be in a position, a higher position, getting promoted at work, getting, receiving various recognitions and acknowledgments, and all of that is also not going to bring this deep and lasting happiness for oneself and not for others. And so this king renounces all of these things, and he undertakes practice. He says, I'm going to pursue this path of the Dharma. And the first thing he does is to go to this Buddha and to ask the Buddha, please show me what I need to do. I want to create this beautiful Buddha world that will be a path to liberation for all beings, but I need you to show me how to do that. And then, the Buddha says, no, you really, you need to figure that out for yourself. He says, I can see how profoundly enlightened you are, but I'm not able to see that for myself. And I'm asking you, please teach me. Please teach me. And in that moment, then the Buddha, Lokeshwaraja, recognizes his sincerity, and he says, okay, I will show you all of these Buddha worlds. He introduces him to these worlds, and he shows him the good and the says the the fine and the coarse, the good things and the bad things about them. And having seen that, then at that point we get to this line where he establishes the this all-surpassing, this primal vow. And it's in the midst of 48 vows. So I want to start by introducing, just briefly kind of talking and showing you, walking you through these 48 vows. And then we'll talk specifically about the 18th of those 48, with the understanding that the essence of all 48 is contained within number 18, the primal vow. And the other 48, the other 47 are a kind of an elaboration on the meaning of the 18th vow. So let's begin by looking at these 48 vows. I like to kind of have people take turns reading. If you're willing to take a turn reading, maybe could you just raise your hand? Okay, I got a few people. I got Donald, Joseph, Daryl, Jay, Irene, Igor, Linda. Okay, great, great. So the folks who got the screen on and raised their hand, we'll just kind of take turns. So I think we'll read maybe three at a time. So Donald, could you read the first three?
Okay. If, when I attain Buddhahood, there should be hell, the realm of hungry spirits, or the realm of animals in my land, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment.
Okay, great. And could you read the next two?
Yes. If, when I attain Buddhahood, the humans and devas in my land should, after their death, return once more to the three evil realms, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment. If, when I attain Buddhahood, the humans and devas in my land should not all be the color of genuine gold, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment.
Okay, great. And then Joe, could you read the next three, please? Oh, Joe, you're muted.
Sorry about that.
Okay, I do it all the time.
If when I attain Buddhahood, the humans and devas in my land should not all be of the same appearance and should be either beautiful or ugly, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment. If when I attain Buddhahood, the humans and devas in my land should not remember all of their former lives and thus be unable to know at least the events of the previous 100,000 kodas of nayutas of kulpas, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment. If when I attain Buddhahood, the humans and devas in my land should not possess divine eyes and thus be unable to see at least 100,000 kodas of nayutas of Buddha lands, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment.
Thank you. Let's see. And then could I have, Daryl, could you read the three, please?
Thank you. If, when I attain Buddhahood, the humans and devas in my land should not possess divine ears and thus be unable to hear the teachings, beings expounded by at least 100,000 kotas of nayutas of Buddhas, or remember them, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment. If, when I attain Buddhahood, the humans and devas in my land should not possess the wisdom to see into the minds of others and thus be unable to know the thoughts of the sentient beings of at least 100,000 kotas of nayutas of Buddha lands, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment. If, when I attain Buddhahood, the humans and devas in my land should not possess divine feet and thus be unable to go beyond at least 100,000 kotas of nayutas of Buddha lands in a thought moment, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment.
Okay, great. And then let's see, Jay, could you read these next three, please?
If, when I attain Buddhahood, the humans and devas in my land give rise to any thought of attachment to the body, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment. If, when I attain Buddhahood, the humans and devas in my land should not dwell in the state of truly settled and necessarily attain nirvana, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment. If, when I attain Buddhahood, my light should be finite, illuminating, even 100,000 Kotis and Nayutas of Buddha lands, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment.
Okay, great, thank you. And then let's see, Igor, could you read it, please?
Sure. Just a second. There is something on my screen, I'm sorry. That is covering part of it. Can you move it down? Okay, got it. 13. If when I attain Buddhahood, my life should be finite, limited even to 100,000 kotis of nayutas of kalpas, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment? 14. If when I attain Buddhahood, the number of Shravakas in my land could be counted and known, even if all the Shravakas and Pratyeka Buddhas in the triple thousand great thousand worlds should spend at least 100,000 kalpas counting them, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment? 15. When I attain Buddhahood, the humans and devas in my land will not have a limited lifespan, except when they wish to shorten it freely according to their original vows. Should this not be so, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment?
Great, thank you. And Linda, could you read the next three, please?
When I attain Buddhahood, the humans and devas in my land should even hear that there are names of evil acts. May I not attain the perfect enlightenment? If when I attain Buddhahood, the countless Buddhas throughout the worlds of the 10 quarters should not all glorify and praise my name, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment? If when I attain Buddhahood, the sentient beings of the 10 quarters, who with sincere and entrusting heart aspire to be born in my land and say my name even 10 times, should not be born there, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment? Excluded are those who commit the 5 grave offenses and those who slander the right.
The right dharma.
Dharma. I didn't see the last word, sorry.
It gets cut off sometimes on people's screens. Thank you. Okay, and that's, again, that's the primal vow that we'll be talking about a lot today. Okay, and then let's see. Irene, could you read the next three?
If when I attain Buddhahood, the sentient beings of the 10 quarters, while awakening the mind aspiring for enlightenment and performing meritorious acts, should desire to be born in my land with sincere aspiration, and yet should I not appear before them at the moment of death, surrounded by a host of sages, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment? If when I attain Buddhahood, the sentient beings of the 10 quarters, upon hearing my name, should place their thoughts on my land, cultivate the roots of virtue, and direct their merit with sincere mind, desiring to be born in my land, and yet not ultimately attain birth, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment? If when I attain Buddhahood, the humans and devas in my land should not all have the 32 major physical characteristics of a great person, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment?
Okay, great, thank you. And I can read three, I'll take my turn. When I attain Buddhahood, the bodhisattvas of other Buddha lands who come and are born in my land will ultimately and unfailingly attain the stage of succession to Buddhahood after one lifetime. Accepted are those who, in accordance with their original vows to guide others freely to enlightenment, don the armor of universal vows for the sake of sentient beings, accumulate roots of virtue, emancipate all beings, travel to Buddha lands to perform bodhisattva practices, make offerings to all the Buddha Tathagatas throughout the 10 quarters, awaken sentient beings countless as the sands of the Ganges, and bring them firmly to abide in supreme true enlightenment. Such bodhisattvas surpass those in the ordinary bodhisattva stages in carrying out practices. In reality, they cultivate the virtue of Samantabhadra. Should it not be so, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment? If, when I attain Buddhahood, the bodhisattvas in my land, who, upon receiving my transcendental power, and making offerings to Buddhas would not be able to reach all the innumerable and countless Nayutas of Buddha lands in the brief period of a single meal, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment? If, when I attain Buddhahood, the Bodhisattvas in my land, accumulating roots of virtue in the presence of Buddhas, should not be able to obtain whatever they wish in order to make offerings to these Buddhas, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment? Great. Let's see, Donald, would you be able to read three more, please? Next week.
If, when I attain Buddhahood, the Bodhisattvas in my land should not be able to expound the Dharma with all-knowing wisdom, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment? If, when I attain Buddhahood, the Bodhisattvas in my land should not possess the diamond-like body of Narajya, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment? When I attain the Buddhahood, all the myriad features enjoyed by the humans and devas in my land will be glorious and resplendent with superb, wonderful, and exquisite forms and colors that are beyond description. If even with the divine eye that they acquire, they should be able to clearly distinguish and enumerate these features, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment?
Okay, thank you, Donald. Okay, and let's see. Joe, could you read the next three, please?
If when I attain Buddhahood, the Bodhisattvas in my land, even those of little virtue, are unknown to perceive the Bodhi tree of immeasurable light and countless colors, which in 4 million li in height, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment? If when I attain Buddhahood, the Bodhisattvas in my land should not possess wisdom and eloquence when comprehending, reciting, and expounding sutras, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment? If when I attain Buddhahood, the Bodhisattvas in my land should possess limited wisdom and eloquence, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment?
Thank you. Okay, let's see. And Daryl, could you read three more, please? Oh, Daryl, you're muted.
Sorry. When I attain Buddhahood, my land will be pure and brilliant, completely illuminating and reflecting all the countless, innumerable, and inconceivable Buddha worlds in the 10 quarters, as if one were looking at one's own face in a clear mirror. Should it not be so, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment? When I attain Buddhahood, all the mirrored features of my land, from the ground to the sky, such as palaces, pavilions, ponds, streams, flowers, and trees, will comprise countless precious substances and 100,000 kinds of fragrance, which splendidly adorn the land, surpassing anything in the realms of human endeavors. Those fragrances will pervade the worlds in the 10 quarters, bringing bodhisattvas who sense them to perform the practices of the Buddha way. Should it not be so, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment? When I attain Buddhahood, the sentient beings throughout the 10 countless and inconceivable Buddha worlds in the 10 quarters, having received my light and having been touched by it, will become soft and gentle in body and mind, surpassing humans and devas in those qualities. Should it not be so, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment?
Great. And so, Jay, could you read three for us?
If when I attain Buddhahood, the sentient beings of countless and inconceivable Buddha worlds in the 10 quarters, having heard my name, should not attain the Bodhisattva's insight into the non-origination of all existence and all the profound dharanis, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment. When I attain Buddhahood, the women throughout the countless and inconceivable Buddha worlds in the 10 quarters, having heard my name, will rejoice in entrusting heart, awaken the mind aspiring for enlightenment,
and wish to renounce the state of being woman. If after the end of their lives they should be reborn as women, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment. When I attain Buddhahood, the Bodhisattvas throughout the countless and inconceivable Buddha worlds in the 10 quarters, having heard my name, will, after the end of their lives, always perform the sacred practices and fulfill the Buddha way. Should it not be so, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment.
Great. Thank you, Jay. Igor, would you be able to read 3 for us?
37. When I attain Buddhahood, the devas and humans throughout the countless and inconceivable Buddha worlds in the 10 quarters, who, having heard my name, prostrate themselves on the ground and bow to me in reverence, rejoice in an entrusting heart, and perform the bodhisattva's practices, will be revered by devas and people of the world. Should it not be so, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment. 38. When I attain Buddhahood, the humans and devas in my land will acquire garments as soon as such a desire arises in their minds, and they will naturally be clothed in fine robes as commanded and prescribed by the Buddhas. If they should need sewing, bleaching, dyeing, or washing, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment. 39. If, when I attain Buddhahood, the humans and devas in my land should not attain happiness and delight comparable to those of a bhikshu whose blind passions have all been exhausted, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment.
Thank you. Linda, would you be able to read 3 more for us?
When I attain Buddhahood, the bodhisattvas in my land who wish to see innumerable glorious Buddha lands in the 10 quarters, whenever they please, will be able to see them all reflected in the jeweled trees as if one were looking at one's own face in a clear mirror. Should it not be so, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment. If when I attain Buddhahood, the bodhisattvas in other lands, having heard my name, should have any disabilities in their physical faculties until they become Buddhas, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment. When I attain Buddhahood, the bodhisattvas in other lands, having heard my name, will all attain the samadhi of pure emancipation while dwelling in that samadhi. They will make offerings in an instant of thought to the countless and inconceivable number of Buddhas, world-honored ones, without losing their consternation of mind. Should it not be so, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment.
Great, thank you. And then Irene, could you read 3 more, please?
I attain Buddhahood, the bodhisattvas in other lands, having heard my name, will be reborn into noble families after the end of their lives. Should it not be so, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment. When I attain Buddhahood, the bodhisattvas in other lands, having heard my name, will leap and dance with joy and perform the bodhisattva practices, thereby acquiring the roots of virtue. Should it not be so, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment. When I attain Buddhahood, the bodhisattvas in other lands, having heard my name, will all attain the samadhi of universal sameness. While dwelling in that samadhi, they will continually behold all the countless and inconceivable numbers of Buddhas until they become Buddhas themselves. Should it not be so, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment.
Great, and I'll read the last 3. When I attain Buddhahood, the bodhisattvas in my land will spontaneously be able to hear, as they wish, the Dharma that they desire to hear. Should it not be so, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment. If, when I attain Buddhahood, the bodhisattvas in other lands, upon hearing my name, should not be able to reach the stage of non-retrogression, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment. If, when I attain Buddhahood, the bodhisattvas in other lands, upon hearing my name, should not be able to obtain the first, second, and third Dharma insights, and should they fall back from the pursuit of the teachings of the Buddhas, may I not attain enlightenment. And then I think that one repeats twice. So those are the 48 vows So we've just recited the 48 vows. So we've built up a tremendous store of merit just now as a group through this hearing these vows of the Buddha. So they all take this familiar pattern, right? If when I attain Buddhahood, and then they end with, may I not attain perfect enlightenment, right? And so by becoming a Buddha, by realizing awakening and becoming Amida Buddha, then all of these vows are fulfilled. That's a kind of essential meaning of the sutra. And if you look into the second section, this is in section one of the larger sutra. If you look into section two, it begins with the Shakyamuni Buddha's disciple Ananda asking him, did he do it? Did he fulfill the vows? And Shakyamuni said, yes, he did. Yes, he did. And he specifically refers to several of these vows and says, and so these things are the case. And one of those vows that he specifically refers to, and bear with me while I pan up the screen a bit here, is this 18th vow. If when I attain Buddhahood, the sentient beings of the 10 quarters who with sincere and entrusting heart aspire to be born in my land and say my name even 10 times should not be born there, may I not attain the perfect enlightenment. Excluded are those who commit the 5 grave offenses and those who slander the right Dharma. So this set, 18, 19, and 20 are very important because these three describe how someone is able to be born into this pure land. The other vows either describe the circumstances of the beings who are born into that pure land. They describe the conditions of the pure land. They describe the Buddha, what Amida Buddha is like, what the Buddha who's there will be like. So 12 and 13, for example, they talk about how, you know, this Amida Buddha is going to have this limitless lifespan and measurable light. But it's 18, 19, and 20 that tell us how I will be born in the Pure Land, right? And so they provide these conditions for birth. And so the 18th vow, the sort of condition for realizing birth in the Pure Land, is to, with sincere and entrusting heart, aspire to be born in my land and say my name even 10 times. So from Shinran's perspective, the most important aspect of this is the sincere and entrusting heart. We call this Shinjin, to have that entrusting heart and to believe that this teaching is true. And then as an expression of one's joy and gratitude, to say my name even 10 times, to say the Nembutsu. And then that is how one realizes birth. So this 18th vow tells us that this is how you're born in the Pure Land. And so for Shinran, that's why he has this sort of laser sharp focus on the 18th vow. And he received it from his teacher, Honen, the sense that this vow tells how I, Shinran, will be born, how I, Henry, will be born in the Pure Land. For each of us, you know, this vow describes our path to birth. And so Shinran describes this as the all-encompassing vow, right? So let's see. Let me do something here. Just a moment here. Okay, so I'm sharing my whole desktop now. And so So that's this vow here, this section here. So now I'm showing this section from Shoshinge. Yeah. Rearranging things so that we can see them. As you can see, I'm still learning how to do this via Zoom, having kind of gotten really used to doing these things in person with folks and having paper handouts and things. It's this vow here. He then established the supreme incomparable vow. He made the vow, the great vow, rare and all-encompassing. So to say that this vow is all-encompassing, he's referring to this 18th vow. And so what that means is that in this single 18th vow, contained are all of the meaning that we just read, those 47 vows. And that meaning includes things that are affirmed and things that are rejected. Let's see. A little bit bigger for everybody to be able to see. Is that, can you see that okay? Is that visible for folks? Okay, good. So there are things that are rejected here. Things like the three poisons, things like racial discrimination, discrimination on body appearances, the 35th vow, which is, I'm sure, you know, flags go up for everyone when they read that, especially these days, but my way of reading it, which I believe is also in harmony with the tradition, is that it's really a rejection of gender-based discrimination. And there are things that are also affirmed, remembering the past, hearing a variety of teachings. I want us to have plenty of time for a conversation now, so I'm not going to go into great depth on these at this point. Again, this handout's available on the website. But you can see that these are an expression of the Buddha's compassion. There are things in this world that we live in that the Buddha saw and sees and feels are very unfortunate and recognizes those as a cause of suffering. And so those items are kind of selected and rejected, abandoned. And then there are other things that are recognized as this is what brings liberation from suffering. And those things are selected and embraced and held onto and affirmed. And those are things such as hearing a variety of teachings, understanding other people's perspective, traveling to where one is needed. And most importantly, the attainment of nirvana. This 11th vow. This is how we understand that through hearing the Nembutsu, through reciting the Nembutsu with a heart of deep entrusting, that we realize our liberation from samsara, from suffering. So that's affirmed in all these vows. So within the 18th vow, all of this meaning is contained. If we wish to understand the depth of this all-encompassing vow, then we need only look to this broader meaning expressed in the 48 vows. But the essential meaning is the Buddha's wish to liberate everyone from suffering and to make that accessible to everyone. Not everyone can master all of the sutras. Not everyone can observe the pure precepts, the pure rules for being a monk or not. Not everyone can be a perfect vegetarian like the Dalai Lama is advocating, right? But anyone can awaken this heart of entrusting in the Buddha. Anyone can hear and say, Namo Amida Butsu. And so the 18th vow expresses the Buddha's compassion because it's so accessible to everyone. It's not easy. Anyone can do it, which isn't to say that anyone can do it easily. You know, it's said to be later on in the Shoshinge, we read that among difficult matters, this is the most difficult thing to awaken this heart of entrusting. But it's the path for everybody to realize awakening. So let's just look once more at these words of the Shoshinge then up here. So this is when we chant, these are the words that we're chanting when we chant Shoshinge. Kondyu mujo shushogan chohotsu keu daiguze. And so when you chant these lines, these are the words. He then established the supreme incomparable vow. He made the great vow rare and all-encompassing. So this vow is referring to the primal vow, and it's all-encompassing because it contains this vast heart of compassion that's elaborated in depth through the 48 vows. So I want to shift gears now. I'm going to turn off the recording, and then we can have a free and open discussion here of what we've read and any questions that came up. Why don't we do Gassho here, just for those who will be joining us sort of online later, so that they could have that Gassho as a kind of conclusion to this learning. Please join me in Gassho. Namman dabutsu, namman dabutsu.